The topic today is Sic Transit Gloria Mundi, which is not about rapid transit in Orange County and Los Angeles, which is, of course, Sic Transit. It is how fleeting are the glories of the world. And I want to take us through a couple of journeys in terms of the fleeting glories of the world at this time where Holy Week and Passover very nearly coincide and do overlap. But my journey of this sermon begins yesterday, well, actually long before yesterday, as all sermons do, but begins yesterday at the bar mitzvah of my nephew, Isaiah. Isaiah is adopted by a single mother and obviously raised Jewish, or the bar mitzvah would have been pretty silly. His birth mother is white and his birth father is black, and Isaiah is the wave of the future. And at this bar mitzvah were every ethnicity and tone and what we call race blended in, and not at all sorting by skin color and not even sorting by religion, because the majority of the kids that he went to school with and his friends who were at the bar mitzvah and the reception were not Jewish. It was the world in microcosm, the way that it should be. And then I'm looking over at the table where the grown-ups were sitting. I don't sit at the grown-up table yet, quite appropriately, my wife believes. I'm looking at the Holocaust survivors. I'm looking at about seven people who survived the Shoah, the extermination. And I'm thinking about, my goodness, what an extraordinary journey they have taken. My mother-in-law, about whom I'm going to be speaking more at the end of this talk, my mother-in-law was born in Poland, received with great joy by her family, and had every expectation of being what her family had been for years, which is farmers. They had cows, so I tell our grandchildren and our children that they have ancestors who were cowboys. Her father worked in a bicycle repair shop at one point. They couldn't dream or nightmare what was going to happen in their lives, how they would be betrayed, how they would be sent to the camps, work camps and death camps, how she would lose all of her family except for one cousin perished in the Holocaust. In the middle of all that, she could not have imagined living, not to mention surviving the war, coming to America, coming from Poland to Iowa. Well, at least they had cows. Going from Iowa to Chicago, from Chicago to Los Angeles, creating a life, creating a living. These were things they could not have imagined at birth, at young adulthood, and in the middle of the Shoah. What a journey they've been on. And then they had to survive the 60s, where their children went off to Berkeley and to Cal and boy, sure, we're not in Iowa anymore world. They had to survive this modern world. What a journey that they came on. Nothing prepared them, and by implication, nothing prepares us for the world that we encounter. And yet, they prevailed. They survived. They came to this moment. They came to this moment when I'm sure they could not have envisioned, my mother-in-law certainly have envisioned, Nancy adopting a child as a single mother. Nancy's sister, who was married to a Christian, adopting a child in her 50s. My own two half-Asian grandchildren and their great-grandchild, Isaiah, who is half-black. What a journey of opening up, of good, of terror, of tragedy, of trauma, to the point where we looked around the room and nobody saw anything unusual. It was people together, What an incredible journey. As I looked at those adults and understood what they had normalized in their lives, what they could not have imagined when they were young. What can we not imagine that we can help build and create and prepare the way for? Passover and Holy Week, overlapping. They're both stories of journeys. The Passover is the story on one level of slavery in the West, where the sun sets in Egypt, towards a sunrise in the East in a new world. It is a story of a liberation of a people, filled with stories and miracle stories that you may take seriously, some may take factually, but it's so much deeper than the story. Because when you look at the elements of what's in the Passover story, it is a story not simply of the journey of a people from darkness to light, but it's everybody's story by metaphor. And believe me, what I'm about to tell you is not a stretch. Understand that the people that wrote the Bible were as intelligent as we are, and actually a lot more focused because they didn't have the internet and cell phones and blueberries and blackberries and all those other berries. They were actually thinking about stuff. Every piece of Freudian and Jungian imagery that we feel so sophisticated about, they knew. If you don't know, believe that, read Song of Songs and understand that every fruit and food and geographic reference is a body part. They understood symbolism. So it's the story of everyone. We are, most of us, conceived in darkness, or at least in low ambient light. Many of us with Johnny Mathis in the background, or at least our children, we are born through a wet canal. Hello? The Red Sea parting is a birth story from darkness through a canal, and in the Hebrew it's Mitzrayim. It means a squeezed place out into the light. And like every infant, we see the light, we scream at it, we are fed. We don't feed ourselves. We are fed manna from heaven or water from a rock. We don't know where it comes from, but we are given it. And are we thankful? Are we grateful? Often not. And we cry and we rebel. And our parents try to teach us the rules. And we rebel against the rules. And then they come back down like Moses from Sinai the second time and say, all right, you listen up and you listen good. And we kind of start to get it at some point. It's the story of every individual life, every person's journey, that we are taken care of, we rebel, we finally get the law, we put it together, we partner up, we get our own families, and then we come to another river that we can't cross over. And those are the boundaries of our lives. And we send our children across that river with the gifts of our legacy so that they can take their journey till they encounter the next river. And what is it that we give them? What do they learn from our triumphs, from our folly? How do we transmit our wisdom to them, and how shall they live? And how do we deal with the fact that we can't cross over that next river? And it's tough. Not in the Bible itself, but in the commentary, the Midrash, God says to Moses, well, Moshe, you've come to the river, you've done a very nice job, you've had 2 40-day stays at Sinai, which is more than your HMO would normally allow for, but now it's time for you to die. And Moses says, not in exactly these words, but pretty much the Los Angeles kind of words, me? Die? Are you kidding? Do you know who I am? I think God's answer was probably, yeah, I know who you are. And Moses, I'm much too important. You can't take me away from them. They need me. And God gives Moses in this Midrash a great gift. He puts him forward in time and puts him outside the tent of meeting. Incidentally, the word tabernacle is related to the word tavern, just so that you know. He puts him outside the tavern, and he's listening to what the next generation is saying, and he doesn't understand them. It's all gibberish. He's confused. They might as well be text messaging in words that he doesn't understand. The Midrash does not go into how rotten the music of the new generation was, but you can probably figure that out too. And Moses then understands there's no place for him in that future, that he has lived his life, he's come to his river, and he says, okay, I surrender, it's all right, death is not the enemy, all my trials soon be over, it's all right. Well, the rhythm, and in some ways you can see that story of Moses' confusion of not feeling a part of the next generation as really one of the first literary allusions to diminishment. I won't say dementia, but to diminishment. Diminishment of senses, diminishment of cognitive ability, all those things that we as human beings worry about. And it's there in that ancient commentary. And he understands. He is who he is. His legacy continues. But his time has passed. In Holy Week, you have also the story of a journey. A journey, again, that can be seen in the regular biblical narrative of Jesus entering Jerusalem, riding a donkey to the place of his sacrifice as Isaac rides a donkey to the place of his sacrifice. You can see him welcomed with great parades and hosannas and palm fronds guiding the way, and such are the glories of the world. And one of the messages of the gospel narrative of Palm Sunday and of Holy Week is the glories of the world may be fleeting in terms of our emotions. You may be received at birth with great praise and song, but you can't count on everything going smoothly. You may be welcomed and raised up into a high place, but you can be pretty sure that eventually life is going to at least bring you down for a while. Because if it doesn't, then you have not been tested and you have not lived. And Jesus spends that week as a person. He does his work. He teaches. He heals. He does the things that were given to him to do. And he knows how his week will end. Just as everyone in this room knows how our metaphoric week will end. It is as inevitable for us as for Jesus, as for Moses. We are mortal. He feels betrayed, quite sensibly, because he is betrayed by both friend and by foe, and he is abandoned both by friend and foe, and he feels abandoned. In the penultimate moment on Good Friday, he cries out in the words of the 22nd song, Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? Get a couple of messages from that. One of them is, if he could feel forsaken and abandoned, it seems to me to be a pretty good role model for you and for me when we feel down, when we feel abandoned, when we feel hurt and isolated, to go, you know, I don't enjoy the feeling, but it doesn't mean that I've lost my faith in life. It doesn't mean that I do not believe in the sunrise. It doesn't mean that Easter, that the sun will not come up again in the east and warm my heart again. There's tremendous impact in that story and in that week for me, because it's a very human week, from joy to sorrow to resolution and living life in those kinds of stages. When I was at the bar mitzvah yesterday, and I looked at the table of the survivors, the people who had gone through their own birth and trauma and death, and in a sense resurrection story, had chosen life, had the profound ability to say yes again to life, to love, to family after that experience. And I looked at them, and it was tempting only to see their diminishment. It was tempting to see how difficult it was how many walkers there were, and I forgot to bring the stool out, so I'll use yours, how they were, as the Bible said, of Jacob and of Moses, how they were stricken with age, which I understood in my head. My wife is going through a very difficult time with her mother's diminishment. Not so much the physical diminishment, but the cognitive diminishment. My mother-in-law has lost her short-term memory. She can tell you everything about her childhood, everything about the Holocaust, everything about Iowa. She doesn't dwell on the Holocaust, thank goodness. She can tell you everything about Iowa, everything about the family. But Helene, who spends 2, 3, 4 days with her, I'll call, as I did 2 days ago, and say, is Helene there? And she said, I haven't seen her in weeks. And Helene will be in the next room. Helene will spend the day and then be standing at the elevator. Her mother will poke her head out and say, what are you doing here? Mom, I was here all day. And she goes, oh, see, I don't remember anything. She's not unhappy. She has a quality of life. Her smile yesterday during the bar mitzvah at this fourth generation, and adoption or no adoption, race, not race, this is to her, her great grandson. Her smile lit up a room. She has the capacity for joy. She doesn't remember the joy a moment later, as she doesn't remember the pain a moment later. And my wife is very frustrated, of course, because, where's Barbara? Because we want our good deeds to count. We want them to be noticed, to be remembered. We want to write them on walls. And Helene gets discouraged because her mother doesn't remember all of the time Helene's spending there. All of the time that she's cooking, that she's cleaning, that she's loving, that she's stroking, that she's taking the time. But it all counts. And it's so funny because most of us think that caring is related to length of memory. So that if you do something good for an old person, it doesn't have the same half-life if you do something good for a young person, because it only counts if it's remembered. Nonsense. Nonsense. It doesn't even have to be remembered. We walk the floors and the parks and the malls with our various grandchildren. I sing to them, and God help them, I hope they forget that part. But I sing to them, I stroke them, I love them, I comfort them. They will not remember in conscious memory. But we all get that the time that we spend with an infant and with the young counts, even if they don't remember or have individual recollection of that. I want to say this. It counts with everyone. Every good, well-intended deed, all of the time that we spend with each other, wherever we are on the journey from darkness to light to darkness, it counts. Every time we hold a hand, it doesn't depend on them remembering. Every time we're in a hospital and we talk softly to someone we love, it doesn't matter whether there's conscious memory. What matters is that we are doing the right thing and being present to each other in a loving kind of way. We are, without the political overtones, we are fellow travelers on this planet. And the length of memory is not the worth of what we do. The meaning is in the moment. It isn't in the result. I remember when I was doing my internship at a mental hospital in Napa, as a matter of fact, my first day I spent with somebody who was catatonic. And I said to my supervisor, boy, there was a wasted hour and a half. My supervisor said, no. the time that you spent, whether this person remembers you or doesn't remember you, whether this person comes back to the world or doesn't, that time counted because somebody cared enough and thought he was important enough to spend time with. Not that it was a crazy person, not that it's a sick person, not that it's an old person, but a person. Not that it's a black person or a Jewish person or an Asian person, but a person. The journey, I think, from darkness to light, the journey from death to life, from ignorance to knowledge, from ingratitude to gratitude, is a journey of living that we each do. Our biblical stories give us a microcosm to understand the process and the ups and the downs. But life is lived in individual moments with individual people when we choose to see their humanity and we choose to share ours with them. Length of time, length of days, whether it's a butterfly or whether it is us measured against eternity, it means at one level nothing. There's this brief moment, this candle flicker of life in the vastness of time and space and space-time and eternity, and it means nothing except it means everything. Life is made more precious because it effervesces, it goes away. Life is made more precious, and those joys that we have, sic transit gloria mundi, how fleeting are the joys of the world, yes. But also, how fleeting is the pain of the world. Each moment has its pleasures and its pains. We cycle through them, and it is not the length of time, the length of days. It is that what we imbue those moments with, as a breath, as a candle in the wind, we live our lives, and they are given warmth and meaning by what we do and what we choose in each moment with each other. Eternity. Eternity is a timeless moment. Now is timeless. Infinite past, infinite future. And we are here today, some filled with a sense of glory, some filled with a sense of pain. Know that both are illusions. And what remains real is what we do in the moment, as we look into each other's eyes, as we touch each other's hands, as our emotions touch each other's hearts. That's why we come together in community, to join our vaporous breaths, our small voices, in this precious time together.